Right, this is the Gareth Cliff Show, and we are about to start Democracy 101. Jack Motlanthe is here with me, and we are talking about all things to do with our elections that are coming up. We're also talking about democracy as a concept. We've had all kinds of interesting discussions with people who've broken it down for us at the IEC in here a couple of times that have made me feel much better about the integrity of our election going forward. We've had political parties. We've talked about what we should be worrying about as a country, what we should not. All kinds of things. And we're going to carry that on today. I'm very happy to welcome to the show this morning both the leader of the party called the Organic Humanity Movement, and that is Lauren Bernardo, who's on the line. Hey, Lauren, how are you?
Hi, Gareth. I'm doing well. Hello to all the viewers and listeners. Nice, and I'm so excited to talk about democracy. And it's going to be a lot of fun, I hope.
I hope so, too. I really don't know anything about you guys, so I'm excited to hear about it. But also in studio, we have one of your compatriots, one of the other members of your party. Just hit the mute there for me.
I got it.
Thank you. Okay, very good. And that is Matthew Pinard, who is also from the Organic Humanity Movement. I didn't even know you guys had this many members. You're putting a huge amount of pressure on all the other parties, you know. So Matthew and Lauren, both of you, welcome. So, okay, Lauren, I'm going to let you start off with this. Tell me about OHM. I know that that is a unit of measuring electrical resistance, the ohm, but I didn't know anything else about it. So what is the Organic Humanity Movement? You start off and give us a little introduction to OHM and what you guys stand for.
Okay, well, I love that you mentioned the unit of resistance because that's exactly the inspiration for the name. We started, or should I say I started, I was involved in politics since 2014. I was unhappy with how politics works internally, so I quit the party that I was with, and I decided to start the Organic Humanity
Movement. Who were you with then, just out of interest?
The Democratic Alliance.
Okay.
And lots
of people quit the Democratic Alliance and the ANC. In fact, the ANC and DA lose a lot of people to start up new parties. It's quite a fun game they play. All right. So then you're in the West Cape. You started this?
Yes. Yeah. Because we recognize, you know, people leave because we recognize how toxic the internal politics is. You can't move forward. You can't bring a vision to fruition with the amount of internal toxic politics that takes place. So I started the Organic Humanity Movement, and we registered in 2018 as a political party with the IEC, nationally registered across the country. And it was just me all by my lonesome. And then I started approaching people, and we grew slowly but surely to the point where I think at the end of 2019, we had 89 members. And then by the time we hit the 2021 elections, we had over 900 members. We're now sitting at around 2,000 members. And one of the things I wanted to do was create an environment where normal, good, decent, upstanding citizens could get involved in politics without having to lick the backsides of party bosses. So we have a very different internal culture with the Organic Humanity Movement. And what our main function is to actually get rid of party politics. And, you know, we've seen electoral reform take place in the Constitutional Court via the changes that took place recently with the Electoral Act. But we want to make those electoral changes at constitution level, because within the first lines of our constitution, it says we're a multi-party democracy. And we believe that multi-party system is actually undemocratic. And we're talking about democracy here, so I hope we can go into that in a little bit more detail.
Sure. I mean, so far, I don't dislike anything that you've said. Do you want to add anything to that, Matthew, before we carry on? Go ahead.
Yeah, our purpose really comes down to a couple of things. It's that direct elections. We want people to vote for individuals. Parties get in the way. They create an accountability buffer between our elected officials and the ordinary people. So that's the first thing that needs to change. And the second thing is we need to change what the role of the government is. They do far too much in this country. They try to solve problems and end up making things worse. So let's put much stricter limits on what the government can and can't do.
I like this. So far, you guys are winning me over. I'm actually already impressed. I was very worried. I said to Jack earlier, he's going to be vegans or something.
Yeah, I thought you guys were going to walk in here with cowbells and all types of high frequency noises. You know what I mean? I was worried for a second.
Yeah.
Love that. That's beautiful. Can I just, Gareth, just take a moment to address the name?
Yeah, go for it.
Yes, please.
Because I'm also looking at the comments here. So Organic Humanity Movement, OHM came first, resistance. What I wanted was to create a resistance against the current regime, because a regime it is indeed. And then I filled in the acronym later, Organic Humanity Movement. Firstly, because we don't lead natural lives. Our kids go to an industrial-style school system. We end up being, most of us, or a lot of us, corporate slaves or slaves in some kind of industry for the rest of our lives, earning a pittance. And then I realized there's absolutely no humanity in society whatsoever. So that's where Organic Humanity Movement came from. But as we've seen, before the Industrial Revolution being implemented, not just in South Africa, but in the world, we actually see the beauty of the name coming to the fore. So we actually oppose the full implementation of the Fourth Industrial Revolution as stated by the founder of the book, Fourth Industrial Revolution, the writer. And we are advocating for a completely different way of progressing. So the World Economic Forum, for instance, will say we have to implement the Fourth Industrial Revolution to progress as a civilization. I'm saying there's another way, and South Africa is going to be at the forefront of that.
Yeah, I like you even more, because who likes Klaus Schwab? I mean, who the hell would want to agree with him? So, okay, this is getting better and better for you guys so far.
Yeah.
Let's just be realistic, though, and either of you can answer these questions. You are a small party. I mean, there are small parties and then there are you guys. It's like, even if you've got these 2,000 members, which is great. And by the way, you deserve credit for having got to a point where you've got 2,000 people who've signed up. But are you looking to take over in a particular place? Are there certain constituencies where you actually have a chance of getting enough votes that you have an actual impact? Or is it really just standing up and making this your clarion call for this election and seeing if you can build for the next one?
So in terms of being a small party, we look quite small because we don't have any big names as members. We don't reach out to people that's already in politics, that's big business people. And so as a result, you don't get as much media attention.
Sure.
But our ground game is pretty strong. So we got a lot more going on behind the scenes than what you'll see in the media. And yeah, it's in terms of this election, when you start from the ground up, when you don't break away from an existing organization with people that's got the name recognition, it takes a while to build. And we decided to go a more natural, organic route rather than try to convince billionaires and big companies to come on board and fund us. We said we're going to make this a party that's about the people, that isn't influenced by big money politics. And so that takes more time to build up. And yeah, we will take a while to get to a place where we can compete for winning the actual elections, but you got to start somewhere.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm pleased that you have, but we've got to have some realistic chance of success. Yeah. Lauren, are there any places that you're particularly hopeful that you'll get a toehold in?
Contrary to, I suppose, what some people would find more intuitive, we actually haven't focused on a specific area. So we have members in every single province. We have candidates in every single province. And we are growing like everywhere at the same time, which makes it slower. So if I went and poured all my energy into Cape Town, we could have a different result. We could have people sitting in council right now. But what we've done is actually looked at the broader spectrum. We've looked at the whole of South Africa. We've included everyone. And we're slowly growing a little bit in Limpopo, a little bit in the Northern Cape, a little bit in the Free State. And our strongest strongholds are Gauteng and Western Cape, specifically Cape Town. But we do put our efforts everywhere simultaneously. And in the 2021 elections, we got 7,000 votes and we had a budget of only 60,000 rand to campaign with. So I'm very proud of our successes, considering you only contested in 50 municipalities.
All right. So Mo Rabbit wants to know, let's start off with who is financing them. People are always suspicious. You said no billionaires, no massive donors, 60,000 rand.
Where did it come from?
Yeah, it's all small. Small donations. Members donating 100 rand here, 200 rand there. There's no.
Well, I mean, you only got to 60 grand, so let's not punish anybody for the 60,000 rand they managed to fleece off of the small group of supporters. I think that's just about the most honest political fundraising I've ever heard of in my life. Very true. I see a lot of people who are already, they've got your logo there. It's Olga, it's Felix, huge groundswell is happening. Lots of people who are very, very excited about this. Linda says, OHM will get my vote.
Already.
All right, so let's get to some specifics. Richard says, are you for or against gun control? He's a single issue voter. And are you willing to name your funders? Well, we've spoken about your funders. It's like ordinary people. Gun control, is that an issue to you guys?
I'd love to talk about that, but first, it's just still on the funding. No one in OHM gets a salary, not even me. We are all doing this as volunteers. Most people in OHM work or have their own businesses. Matthew has his own business. Some of the most hardcore activists in the party
Let me ask Matthew about that. What do you do, Matthew?
I had my own business. I shut that at the beginning of the year to focus on the campaign, but I was just buying and selling furniture.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is this something that you are able to carry on doing without earning a salary from it?
Up until the election, definitely. Wow. If the election goes well, I'll be able to move full time into politics. If we get a couple of seats, we both Laura and I will be in parliament. That'll allow us to focus full time on this.
You're the Gauteng leader.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, Lauren, I mean, we talk about politicians on this show and we're like, well, you know, it would be nice if they worked for nothing. You guys actually are. Are you able to make a living and continue doing this? Or are you going to suddenly, as soon as the elections roll around, find yourself having to like scramble to get a job? I mean, we don't want anyone impoverished, but I like the idea that you're actually an active citizen who's going out there saying what you're doing, doing what you're saying. And not relying on the public purse in any way.
I'm very privileged to be married. I have four children, and my husband provides. So I'm lucky and privileged to be in this position that I can use my spare time, and I use a lot of my spare time for this cause, and I'm doing this for my children and for the future of this country because I see the urgency to make a change because no one else is offering a viable solution at all.
I love it. Go ahead, Jack. Yeah, so, I'm giving you a chance.
Here. A little earlier on, you mentioned that you were part of the DA, if I'm not wrong. You said that you guys had an issue with how the party was set up. How different are the internal mechanisms of OHM in comparison to other political parties?
We mustn't forget to answer gun control. So I'm going to answer both. Yeah. There's no elections internally. So I remain the leader. I came up with this idea. I invited people on board. We have a structure, but I remain the leader. There's no one that vied for a position to be like the provincial leader or whatever. Matthew's part of the NEC, the National Executive Council. And so he's a national leader as well as representing Gauteng right now. And so we will meet and we'll say, hey, this member, they have XYZ skills. Let's ask them if they are willing to be XYZ. We actually... The most important position in OHM is to be an area activator. And unfortunately, it is extremely hard work. So it's very hard to find people who are willing and able to have the time to dedicate to being an area activator. So that's in a normal party, this is how it works. You enter politics, you're unemployed and you enter politics. So you're an unemployable actually. And then you show loyalty to the party by working weekends, working evenings, working public holidays, going on their marches, handing out flyers, proving yourself to them. And then the nicer and more helpful you are to people higher up in the party, the stronger your chances are of getting a position. It has nothing to do with your integrity. It has nothing to do with your capability or skills or qualifications. It's about how loyal you are to the machinery. And I despise how internal politics works. You cannot bring anything good to the country when you have that awful, almost evil way of doing things behind the scenes. And that's how we're different. No internal elections. I remain the leader because I'm driving this vision that I had. And then when it comes to a lot of people, especially now in campaign season, are going to be asking us policy. What's your policy on this? What's your policy on that? We don't have specific policies because we don't believe that in the multi-party system, we have a right to be making changes to policy because the system needs to change first. System change before policy change. So what will happen is that... at a specific time when our support is such that we have enough, we want to change the constitution to usher in this new democracy where everyone votes for their president, member of parliament, who's going to be regionally based, mayor and councillor directly. So no parties, no government funding to parties, no political parties will be recognized. Only independents will approach the IEC and say, we want to run for public, or I want to run for public office. They'll have to pay a deposit, also have a signature requirement. Then they run for public office. Then they get voted in directly by the people. Can you imagine voting for the president directly? I can't wait for that time.
Well, I mean, people like Musi Maimane have been touting that, and largely the work that he and Bosa did is what made it possible for independent candidates to run. So I think if anyone deserves a little bit of credit, let's give him that. Mm-hmm. I like this. Uncle Roy says, married with four kids. I'm so deflated right now. He feels like a loser by comparison. So, well done. Are you a socialist, says Azalea. She wants to know, are you socialist?
We are not socialist.
We are not socialist. Yeah, not at all. Go ahead, Matthew.
We very much believe in a free market. Part of that organic humanity is people should have their own control of their own destinies. So you have the right to choose, make all the choices in your life. It's only when choices become too big for the individual does it move up. So that means very much free market based.
I also want to add to that.
Go on.
I want to add to that and just say that we believe that most of the time the answer to any question is less government when it comes to solutions. What's the solution to this? What's the solution to that? Usually people in government will use a problem as an excuse to latch on and get more control over the population. We believe in less government is always better. And back to the policy issue as well. We have six principles with which we do things in OHM and which we believe that future candidates in or future public representatives should make decisions with. I just want to go through them quickly. All those six principles have to be present in a solution for that solution to be the right one. And they're non-negotiables. Number one, and they're in order for a reason. Number one is individual liberty. That is always first and foremost. You cannot take individual liberty away from a human being. No government can do that. Even if that person is making stupid decisions, doing things that's maybe not in the best interest, a government cannot go and take over. And I can name many examples of how the government does that.
Yeah, but what about criminal justice as an idea? I mean, surely the government has a monopoly on violence so that it can police society and so that people can be put in jail if they break the laws. That is a limit on people's personal freedoms. No?
100%. 100%. I don't know if you want to, Matthew's quite passionate about this one. I don't know if Matthew wants to answer this, but this is 100% it. If you infringe on someone else's freedom by taking away their life, stealing their stuff or whatever, then absolutely the arm of the law will definitely take effect.
Yeah, it comes down to the non-aggression principle. You have the right to do whatever you want as long as you're not harming anyone else or infringing on their freedom to do the same. So as long as you stick to your end of the deal, you maintain your rights, your freedoms. As soon as you infringe on someone else's, that's when you lose those rights and freedoms.
All right. So the other principle, because I interrupted you.
Sorry, there's five. Protection of life, especially in terms of governing, when government happens, it needs to happen from the perspective of actually protecting the most vulnerable in society, leaving people that can look after themselves alone and protecting those that are most vulnerable. Then comes respect for Earth. And just an example is how sewage water is just pumped into False Bay here in Cape Town. And the local government has talked about how it's going to cost billions to actually put the proper filters in place so that cleaner water can enter the ocean, as an example. So respecting the earth. Then comes self-reliance. And this speaks to some of the other things we were speaking about earlier. We're going to rewrite the Constitution, not just the part where we elect our leaders, but rewrite the Constitution. And with self-reliance, we want to acknowledge in our new Constitution of South Africa that the first level of government is actually self-governance. Then comes family government. Then comes community government, all of which are unofficial, but equally as responsible as the next two levels, which is local and national. And then after self-reliance is continuous progress. So, I mean, we don't want to just live in the dark ages. And even though we reject a lot of the fourth industrial revolution, we want to use and be at the forefront of developing the science and technology to take our nation forward. And then finally, national unity, and especially when it comes to a zero tolerance for racism of any shape and form. Those are our six principles. This is how we make decisions. This is how we lead our lives as OHM and OHM members. And this is how we expect future public representatives. And I'm sure a lot will come from the own community in the future government, in the future system. And as such, we don't have policies, but with regards to gun control, because the first level of government is the individual, and because we believe in freedom, we absolutely 100% believe in the right that citizens can arm themselves to protect themselves. And that is something that the government currently shuns, SAPS. So if someone almost kills you, if you survive, fine. Now you must go report that at SAPS. We say, you have the right to defend yourself in any way, shape, or means.
Okay, so that then comes into gun ownership as well. Mm. All right. What about property? Because you mentioned you're free marketeers, so you're capitalist then. Property rights are a big issue in South Africa. We have huge amounts of crime and theft and all the rest of it. But a lot of people are saying in South Africa that the most important thing we have is the ability to give people who have nothing that 350 rand social grant. Are you got any strong feelings on that and on property rights?
Well, property rights are absolutely essential to a free market economy and to the progress of any nation. So those are pretty important. We also, one thing that needs to happen is those need to be strengthened. A lot of people in this country own property, but not by the law. They've just lived on that land for a long time, but don't have any title deed or anything like that. That is something that needs to be fixed. What was the second part?
The grant.
Grants. Okay. We don't actually have grants because we need grants. We need grants because we have them. It's once you put in a system of welfare, then people start to become reliant on it. Mm. So one of the biggest challenges that we're going to have in this country going forward is to help people to become self-reliant so that they don't need to rely on grant systems anymore. So there should definitely not be any new grants. And the current grants will need to be phased out over time as we help people to, well, get on their own two feet and be able to provide for themselves. Because we have a government system and we've had various systems as long as we've existed as a country that has made it very difficult.
But Matthew, people love free stuff. Come on. I mean, like, people love free stuff.
To agree with him on that.
I know, but I mean, you're both idealistic because there are a lot of people who would not like to work and would rather suffer, struggle, make their way with 350 rand from the rest of the taxpayers.
Well, God bless them if they want to do that, but it's not going to happen in this country. Lauren, listen, you guys are, Lauren and Matthew, rather, you guys are saying a couple of things that I completely agree with. I just wanted to find out, like, as far as foreign nationals are concerned, that has become a very hot button issue in this country. A lot of people have problems with the influx of illegal foreigners into the country. What would your plan be to fix that issue, or how would you go about solving it?
Okay, we haven't developed specifics on that yet, but it's one of the key government responsibilities is defense and defending our borders. And right now, our borders are very porous, mm-hmm. shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last estimates I heard is something like 1 million Zimbabweans living here, both legally and illegally.
Yeah,
we need the South African government's responsibility is to look after South Africans. So we need to defend those borders. We need to make sure we don't have so much illegal immigration. People coming here from Zimbabwe, Malawi, the Congo, wherever, those countries are responsible for those citizens lifting them up. We need to have a strong border defense mm-hmm. so that we are in control. We know who's here, who's not here. And yeah, just to maintain that's our national sovereignty is pretty important.
All right. Let me get on to taxes, because that's something that a lot of people care about. Are you guys, because you're so into liberty and not interfering with people's lives and having less government, does that mean that you would be a party that would be less of a tax burden for citizens? You would reduce VAT maybe, because for poor people that can be an added hardship. For rich people and people who want to start businesses and people who want to keep more of the money that they've actually earned, would you be in favor of that? What's your policy when it comes to tax?
Yeah, taxes should be as low as possible.
Let Lauren get this one. Yeah. Lauren?
Yes. Because of liberty and we believe in limited government, naturally tax will get less. So we haven't developed a tax policy as such. Mm-hmm. We're looking at either drastically lowering tax or maybe getting rid of that, for instance, as options. This is something that we're going to develop with other South Africans, other legislatures in national parliament. But we definitely have the principle of getting rid of a lot of tax so that people have more money to spend, boost the economy. I think that's the quickest way for any government to boost the economy is give more money in the hands of the people, not through grants, but through lowering tax, for sure. So that's definitely something we look at. We've looked at a couple of radical options out there, for instance, as either getting rid of VAT completely or lowering tax to a crazy low degree, because we believe that the government is wasting so much money because it's just getting bigger and bigger and people are being overcharged. We hear personal stories from people who work in government, for instance, that see the tender process happening and seeing how much government is actually overcharged for things. For instance, for a house that should cost 100,000 rand, the government actually pays 200,000 rand, for instance, as an example. So yes, a lot less tax for everybody. I think it's a hallmark of a free society.
All right, but you still have to pay for things, right? So roads and
We have an interesting, Gareth, sorry to interrupt you there, but we have an interesting government structure. So it's not only the multi-party system we want to change to a direct election system, we actually want to change the government structure. And it's in our manifesto, which everyone can read on our website. National government will only have three main areas of responsibility. That is the national defense. Defense will include like border protection, international relations, military, intelligence, for instance. And then infrastructure and resources, which will include like mines and roads and things like that. And then the last one is obviously the justice system. And you touched on that earlier. There's still going to be a justice system. There are still going to be laws. Laws are very important, but laws shouldn't control normal people. Law should provide consequences for people that infringe on other people's rights. So that's the difference. We're not putting laws in place that are controlling normal law-abiding citizens. We're putting laws in place that give consequences to people that do bad things, do evil things, and commit crimes. But then local government has the freedom to do the rest. So we're going to make up areas in which are currently there. A lot of them are currently there. We're going to create 52 local governments, local government jurisdictions. These are going to form the local government level. It's called local government now already, so that doesn't change. But they're going to get a lot more autonomy and responsibility. So, for instance, I think major metros can probably be divided into two or up to four, depending on the size and population. But local governments will do things like if there's a requirement, for instance, in our Cape Town local government, if there's a requirement to look after the poor and the needy via a grant, it will be the funds will be raised and distributed there. But remember, we're speaking of a democratic society. The first point of call is always the individual to solve a problem. When problems get bigger, then we call upon society. So even non-profit organizations, we believe, should not be funded by government. It should be crowdfunded by the people, because if people in those non-profits are corrupt or whatever, they'll stop getting funding and they'll fall away eventually. So the best non-profits will always be there, hopefully solving problems in society. When that fails, and when the private sector also can't solve the problem, only then will the people then have to petition government, okay, we need help. We need an old age home. We need SASSA grants. We need whatever. And then people will be taxed accordingly, meaning that it is completely possible that in municipalities, as people prosper, because I believe the less government there is, the more room there is for people to prosper. As people prosper, they can actually become completely independent of their local governments. And then local government will just be there as like a little watchdog, making sure that certain things are in place in the community. So that's our government structure model that we have.
So I'm a person that's very big on checks and balances, right? How would you guys go about... Well, if you are elected into government, what kind of recourse would everyday people have if you guys don't deliver on some of the things that you're saying you would bring to fruition?
Okay, in terms of checks and balances, the biggest thing that's in that area is the separation between the legislature and the executive in government.
Mm.
We currently don't have that. It's just in theory. But at the end of the day, the president is elected by parliament, mm-hmm. who's put in place by the parties.
Yeah.
So if we change the way we elect our leaders, we elect the president directly and we elect our MPs directly, now we have a real separation of powers. And the president and the cabinet's now responsible for the government's administration, and the parliament's responsible for legislature. So that's the biggest check and balance that we need at the moment. We also will create a system whereby you can remove elected leaders. So we can vote our leaders in, but then they rock up and they do something completely different to what they promised.
Yeah.
There's no way to pull them out. Like, yeah, parliament can get rid of leaders, but the people can't. So there needs to be something that people can do, a petition or something where so many people sign, you can say, okay, we need to have a vote of no confidence, not by parliament, but by the people of South Africa as to whether that person should stay in office or not.
Okay. No, because, I mean, it's not like politicians in this country have been particularly honest in the past 30 years. No. So I just wanted to find out if someone says one thing and does the other.
Do we have some recourse?
We have to have some sort of recourse.
And are you guys going to do something about corruption? I mean, there's, everybody on their political party posters, this is what all the other parties are talking about. We're going to stamp out corruption. I don't know if I believe them or not, but they say that.
I'd like to answer that, but I'd also just like to highlight, Gareth, that across the world, whoever claims to be a democracy, they're only at the very least, or should I say the very most, half a democracy. Because voting in a candidate is only halfway there. You have to be able to vote them out. And that's why, as Matthew said, we've incorporated a system by which you can vote someone out. And this is what's been missing in the modern world forever, in all democracies, the ability to vote out the candidates you vote in. Only then can you strive towards a better democracy when you have those checks and balances in place. So we're very excited about that. You can go read about it in our manifesto. But with regards to corruption, getting rid of the multi-party system will get rid of corruption. I think corruption is actually a very weak word for what's taking place in government. It's not corruption. It's blatant raping of the public intellect and resources. And the fact that we call it corruption, actually, we don't do anything about it because it's corruption. When we call it for what it is, I think then people would start getting mad and start actually standing up and doing something about it. So I think the new government system we put in place will deal with that effectively. Nothing else will. You can't have the same system with new people, because the system itself lends itself towards being exploited by those in power. And that's the problem.
My question then becomes, it's going to feel as if we're going to have to stop every 5 minutes because someone did something wrong.
We'll need and to then do, we have to revolt. We'll need to do a referendum every couple of minutes.
Every 2 or 3 months, here we are again. Now Jack has to stop coming to work. Yeah. I have to go vote again because Lauren didn't pay the people she was supposed to pay. You understand what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, it's not something that you can just do super easily. That's of course. There needs to be a kind of threshold limit that you need to hit in order to bring about these votes of no confidence or whatever we're going to call them.
But it means people will have to be involved. What are you going to do, though, to get? I mean, we already can't get almost 2/3 of our people to the polls at this stage as it is. There's like 27 million who are registered to vote this time. Who knows how many of those will pitch up?
What I'm hoping is this election is going to be a threshold for that. Most people who don't vote because they think it's not going to make a difference. And for since 94, it's not really made a difference. The ANC's had such a big majority that the elections are not competitive. So after this election, I think people are going to start realizing that actually your vote does make a difference. The majority in parliament is actually up for grabs. An interesting stat is that if all the people who don't vote because they think it makes no difference got together, formed a party, and all voted for that party, they'd win an outright majority.
Yes.
They wouldn't just beat the ANC. They'd beat the ANC and the DA and all the parties put together.
Yep.
So when you think, no, your vote doesn't make a difference, yes, it actually does if you are active and if you get involved and you participate.
JP says, Lauren, I'm loving the ideas. I hope you get the funding to campaign and gain popularity. Do you need funding? I mean, who doesn't in politics, right?
Who doesn't? We're fundraising as we speak. So we are fundraising in bits and pieces. We actually, earlier this year, actually last month, in between getting all those crazy signatures, and recently we raised 120,000 Rand and we bought posters. We bought gazebo packages. So a lot of our members will have the little tents and the tables and the tablecloths and the flags and all of that. And we pay for Facebook ads and things like that. So now we're raising another 180,000 Rand. Of that 180, we've raised 73,700 Rand. And that's going towards print media ads. That's going towards more Facebook ads. We've paid for our flyers. We're probably going to print more posters. We're going to get more gazebo packages. We want to get about 35 in total. So we actually have people at voting stations on voting day. We're so excited about that. And so, yes, if you want to donate to OHM, you can just go to our website and go look at our bank details there. It's on the front page. Just scroll to the bottom where it says donate. We have PayFast, and then you can just do a normal EFT. We only have one bank account. And if you're a member, and when I talk to you on our Zoom meetings, I'm very transparent about what money's been spent on where. I'll even show you slips and invoices and all the rest as we go through that. But I just want to say, someone said something, and it ties into what Matthew said. Slippery Pickle says, the problem with democracy is everyone gets to vote by Socrates. And I want to declare right here on international YouTube that Socrates was wrong. He lived in a different time. Maybe people were more excited about democracy there where he lived. But everyone can vote, but not everyone does vote. And the key to a thriving democracy is the participation of you, of everyone. Without that, we'll never have a democracy. So if you're sitting back at home and saying, you know what, I don't want to get involved in politics, whatever involvement that is, you are the problem. You will be the reason that we fall into a dictatorship time and time again. A democracy requires the activity of every citizen, or we will fall into the hands of tyrants. It's that simple. And we have in OHM what I'd like to call reluctant candidates. A lot of the candidates, you know, they have jobs, they have lives. They had never dreamed of being in politics, but they see the need, they see the vision, and they've reluctantly become candidates. If they actually have to win a seat, it's going to turn their lives upside down. They're willing to let their lives be turned upside down for the greater cause. But that's what we need. We need reluctant politicians in society, and we need active citizens, or we will always face the problems that we currently do.
So from all indications, we're going to find ourselves in some sort of coalition government straight after the elections, right? So all people that are far more educated on the subject than I am will tell you this, right? How open are you guys to working with other parties?
Yeah, because you've said you hate them.
Right, because structurally, you guys are coming from completely different sides of the spectrum. Are you willing to actually have these kind of conversations in good faith, or is it not on the board at all?
No, that's very specific. Yes, we are not going to go into coalition. I also saw someone ask, are we in the Moonshine Pact? No, we're not. Sorry, what? Moonshot Pact. We're not in the Moonshot Pact.
No, it doesn't matter.
We're not part of that at all. We are not going to coalition with anyone. So when part of our strategy is definitely to lobby other members of parliament to vote for the changing of the constitution. And because of that, and I understand the challenges, because of that, I am hoping that new parties do come in, because I do see the way the new parties are set up, and I'm thinking of one specifically, and I don't want to mention names, they actually would benefit more from the change of the system than the current system right now. So we're going to go what I like to call the Abraham Lincoln route. When he abolished slavery, he had to go to the opposing side, and he had to convince those members of parliament, whatever you call them in America, to vote for the abolishment of slavery. He had a massive task, and he didn't think it was possible, but it happened. We're going that same route. Once we're in, that's why we need at least one seat. Once we have a foot on the door, we're going to start lobbying individuals, not parties, individuals with bums on seats in a National Assembly. Listen, this is what we want to change to the Constitution. We believe we're going to get to a point in the country where the demand from the people is going to be so big that it's in your best interests to vote for this change. And then we're going to build upon that until the point where we can pass this new Constitution in South Africa that outlines the structure of government and the new electoral system.
Okay.
All right. So what kind of a president do you think you're going to be if you become president, Lauren? What are you going to do in your first 100 days, as they say in America? You know, your first 100 days, what are your policies? What are you going to make happen? What are your first priorities?
Well, let me make it clear that's not happening in 2024. We're just hoping for a seat. Then we need to move to the point where we change the system. And then I'm going to have to run for public office separately. OHM won't exist. None of the parties will exist. And then I, and maybe you, Gareth, and maybe everyone sitting here in this interview, all four of us will actually be part of that, becoming candidates to run for the presidential candidate. I absolutely am intending on putting myself forward in the new system. I would never do it within this system. In the new system, absolutely be a candidate, a presidential candidate. But I'm also aware that there will be lots of other people coming to the fore. And I'm excited for that, to have actual robust debate and discussion in a proper campaign, in a proper democracy. I can just imagine and feel the excitement in the air when people are actually talking about issues, not worrying about offending each other, and actually just having open debate in public. And, you know, we need people to represent our values and morals and beliefs. And if you don't find a candidate that does that, then you need to stand for public office, even if it's at the level of president. But definitely the things that we spoke about are things that I would absolutely think about doing in 100 days, lowering tax, giving people a break so they can breathe. I mean, life's hard as it is. Do you know how hard it is? I mean, for a young man to start a family, to even think about providing for a future wife and to have future kids is just so daunting. Our system is emasculating. It is a heartbreak when you actually speak to people one-on-one. The system is breaking people down terribly. So what I would want to do is just break down those barriers so that people can start living. People can start thriving, not just surviving. Most of us live in survival mode in this country. It's not healthy, and it's not why we came to this earth. I do believe that we came to this earth as humans to learn, to explore, and also to enjoy life, and that is not happening for the majority, the absolute majority of South Africans.
All right, I missed a little bit of this, but there's some very specific questions here, and either of you can go ahead and answer this, Matthew or Lauren. Number one, Richard says, 50% permanent pay cut pledge if you get seats. Would you do that?
We can't make specific promises on that, but yeah, we'd like to rein in the spending of governments on salaries in general, get rid of all those unnecessary ministries and things.
Yeah, but, sure. How about that VIP protection?
Yeah.
Those bodyguards. And
for sure. We spend way too much on everything in this country.
Did you see the list last week, by the way, Gareth? Like they've upped the spending in Gauteng. It's absolutely ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous.
The mayor of Joburg apparently needs 6 bodyguards.
Which,
I mean, who even know? Would you know him if you saw him? The tick mayor, the guy from Al Jamal, whatever it is.
No.
I wouldn't know him if I bumped into him tomorrow in the street.
And who's trying to kill these people anyway? Anyway, look.
Yeah. All right. Another very specific question, or rather comment. I would have them in Parliament, says Azalea, just to annoy all the old people. Can you imagine?
I love it.
I will definitely take on that mantle of annoying the old people. I'd love to. But that's true. We have to address the age in Parliament, the average age. These people don't have a future.
Yeah.
They have a retirement to look forward to. They don't have a future to look forward to. So that is a problem. The general age in Parliament, I think, is 65, which is when most people should retire. I mean, someone asked me, where do you see the country in 30 years? And I was thinking, in 30 years, I'm 66. I'm going to be retiring and probably having an absolute drill with my grandkids, I hope. So that means that the country should be definitely fixed by then, absolutely. Otherwise, we've done something very, very wrong.
I'd like to shift gears for a bit, right? We live in a very, not even very. The world has a lot of countries. We are part of different international treaties, different agreements, and all of this stuff. What is your views on where South Africa sits in as far as the international landscape is concerned?
This is a fun one. So the international landscape has done nothing but destroy South Africa. I said on Twitter yesterday that all of us South African citizens are just extras in a movie. We're the background characters. The main characters are the US, the EU, and other international organizations that are absolutely doing everything to capitalize on South Africa's existence at the detriment of the people. We believe in international relations. We're going to have an international relations within national government, but we want international relations on our terms. South Africa has absolutely everything it needs, not only to be sovereign, but to be a superpower, literally. Superpowers were built on the backs of the miners here in South Africa and on the resources here in South Africa. And now we want to turn that around. We'll be a benevolent superpower as a country. I believe we'll get to a point in the world where the world will look at us, France, Italy, EU, I mean, like Europe and America, who feel so advanced, Canada, will look at us and be like, wow, what have they done? Like, what's in their drinking water? How did they get this right? Well, they are crumbling due to like wokeness or whatever is going on overseas that's destroying the fabric of society. So we want to reject a lot of the policies that come from international organizations. For instance, a Belgian-based company is busy paying our government billions to roll out gender ideology training, not to students, but to teachers, so that in classrooms they can foster, for instance, gender ideology instead of teaching it through the curriculum. So a Belgian company is coming to our Department of Basic Education, giving them money to teach your child an ideology you might not even believe in. Unbelievable. Not even teach your child, teach your teacher to teach a child, but doing it this way, they actually circumnavigate the public participation process. It's absolutely disgusting. Also, go look at where UNESCO offices are based in Pretoria. It is at the Department of Basic Education. You can look at it at on Google Maps. It's absolutely disgusting how the government has allowed these crazy overseas companies to influence policy for the people of South Africa. We never voted in Belgium. We never voted in any of those other European countries. We never voted in the WEF or the WHO. We have all the brains we need here in this country to make the tough decisions to take this country forward. We don't need the international community giving us money and telling us how to do things. So we reject that absolutely. If there are going to be any international relations within this new system that we're proposing, it will be on our terms only.
But what would that mean, getting involved in the AU, for example? I mean, we're part of Africa. Do you think the AU does anything useful at all? How about the UN?
Well, that's interesting. The AU, I'm not sure what their purpose is currently. I just believe South Africa can be the leading example of what we should be doing. I do believe that we can strengthen African ties to become a powerhouse of a continent. But it can't be done within the systems that have governed society. In fact, I believe them to be colonial systems that have governed society. We need a completely new way of doing things. And in terms of the United Nations, and UNESCO is an auxiliary of the United Nations, they've done nothing but try to control the population. Agenda 21, for instance, go look at our national development plan. Go look at Agenda 21 on the United Nations website. It's like a carbon copy. We are going to throw those documents out and develop a new South African plan for South Africa. We're not going to just bow down to the sustainable development goals. They all sound nice and lofty and vague, but every single one of the 17 goals is being used as a tool, as an excuse to control the population, the law-abiding population, and to put more power in the hands of government and corporations and give the people less and less freedom, slowly, over time, so you don't even notice it going away. So we reject the UN's Agenda 21. We reject the Sustainable Development Goals. And they should, technically, because they're a peacekeeping organization, should be completely fine with it. And if they're not, then they're hypocrites.
All right. How about international wars? Would we get involved in any of those? Ukraine, Israel, there's all kinds of talk now of Iran. Are these even important things to you? Or do you think we would be an inward-facing country rather than outward?
Definitely an inward-facing country. I definitely think it's important to focus on South Africa. You know, charity begins at home. And even with people that believe we should open our borders, for instance, like I know Julius Malema is very passionate. Africa is for Africans. And although I understand the sentiment, is he going to go build a school in Somalia? Is he going to go build roads in Nigeria? Is he going to use our taxpaying money and go build infrastructure all over Africa? I somehow don't think he will. I also think he likes capitalism too much. I don't think he's actually going to do that. So in that term, we have to look after ourselves. Do you know how much Cape Flats is a war zone? Why should we be worried about what other people are doing overseas? We should be worrying about what's taking place. Kids are being shot to death all the time. Most of the stories don't even break the news. I spoke to a woman from Hanover Park. We are looking at her being a candidate in the local government elections as a woman who's coming from a very war-torn community. Just that week, 9 people were shot. We have a war zone here in South Africa. I'm not even going to look at what's happening in the rest of the world until we have solved these problems here locally.
All right. I mean, that's a very, very straightforward answer. So far, you haven't exactly batted an eyelid and said, I haven't seen you thinking about whether or not something would be popular or not before you say what you think about it.
Yeah. In some circumstances,
because I mean, we've kind of been spoon-fed shit and we've been told that it's sugar for about 30 years. So I'm glad that, you know, we can actually have a genuine conversation about these things. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, Vyasan says here in the comments, I must admit I was very judgmental before and I felt the same way, but I'm quite impressed, especially because she's so passionate, made so much sense. Good luck. You know, I really did. I thought, oh, God, you guys, because I've been like receiving WhatsApps from one of your people. And I was like, oh, God, let's just get these people on so they'll leave me alone. Okay. But I can see how passionate you guys are. And even though there are obviously lots of things here that many career politicians will scoff at and say, are you insane? You can't let these lunatics have the machinery of power. But we've trusted the career politicians and it's done nothing for us.
Absolutely nothing.
And I don't see why we can't play with new ideas. I mean, I don't want us to break things that don't need breaking. And I don't think that that's what you're suggesting necessarily either. But there are lots of areas that we can improve stuff. What do you think of the education system as a whole? I mean, we always talk about education in South Africa being the way that so many people can try to improve their lives, can try to build a future for themselves. Madiba himself said, you know, education is the most important thing you can give to people. And then, you know, he said it's in your hands. But our education system is a disaster. How would you fix that?
Because now we've got a basic minister of education instead of
minister of basic education.
You get what I mean?
All right, so Matthew, you try this.
Yeah, the education system's a massive problem. One of the big problem with it is that we teach our kids how to be employees, how to do something if someone tells you to do it.
Good slaves.
Yeah, we don't teach critical thinking skills. We don't raise our kids in a way that they can go out and solve the problems that our country has. We talk a lot in this country about jobs and creating jobs.
Mm-hmm.
We talk very little about creating entrepreneurs, about creating the type of people who can create jobs. We shouldn't be relying on the government and big corporations to do that. We need to give individuals the skills to be able to look after themselves, to start their own businesses.
Mm.
So the way we educate our children needs to change. Ultimately, the government shouldn't be in charge of education. When the government's in charge of education, they use it to indoctrinate the new generation in their way of thinking. So that can't happen immediately because right now, most South Africans have to rely on the government for education. So we need to move towards a point where that can become independent, where we don't have a uniform system, because also different kids learn in different ways. Not everyone learns the same way, but we teach them all the same way. So that needs to change. We need to have more competition. We need to have different ways of educating, different types of learning for children. And yeah, at the end of the day, it needs to be independent. It needs to be competition and free market based and focus on critical thinking and problem solving skills to give
I'd like to interrupt there, Matthew. Thank you, Matthew. But I'd like to just interrupt because I actually have four children. And since the pandemic happened, I pulled them out of school and I homeschool them now. And the first thing I would want us to do in government, what I would do as a president for sure, and I think next to the political system, the most urgent change is the education system. I would get rid of the curriculum. Dare I say, we'd even have a day where we can just throw out the textbooks because it's been influenced so much by UNESCO from 1994, from the time that the new government was brought into power. UNESCO, United Nations has been there interfering with our curriculum. So I believe that there will probably for a very, very long time, decades even, still be a need for public schooling, even though we want unconventional schooling to become more the norm. I do believe that it will be necessary. And because it will be necessary, I believe the mandate of public schooling should just be three things. Increase the child's IQ, increase the child's EQ. And then lastly, they need to leave school with a tangible, marketable skill of some kind. And if we do that, we'll set up the generation to solve the problems of the future. And that's just in summary. Because I have kids and because I've spoken to so many social workers and teachers and ex-teachers, I have realized that how we set up school is the problem with society today. It's why we are so obedient. It's why we'd rather have the current defective system than think about any new ideas, because we think within the lines. We color within the lines. And we never think out of the box.
Propaganda and brainwashing. I don't disagree with you at all.
The school system just strengthens the state. And Hitler said it when he said, what? Give me the youth and I have the nation. Well, our government is using that strategy right now. Our government's using Nazi strategy to stay in power. And it's disgusting. And so we need to create an education system that helps the individual child flourish through freedom, through playing in nature, through creative arts, focusing on sports, focusing on art, singing, dancing. And only when they get to a certain age, worry about the more tangible things and developing skills. So we're doing school all wrong. That's the reason we're in the mess we are.
I see someone here, Beyond Politics, says Lauren was the founder of Leave Our Kids Alone that took on government and won. Tell us about that.
Okay, in 2019, end of 2019, November specifically, the government put a little article in the paper. I actually saw it in an actual physical newspaper about how they're going to introduce comprehensive sexuality education in the school curriculum. So there's already sex education in the school curriculum. But the international bodyguards of this country was not happy with the level and depth at which our schools are teaching comprehensive sexuality education. And so what I did is started a Facebook group because my kids were in a public school at the time. And I was like, I thought I'd like just get a couple of moms together and we can oppose it at our school. I started a group called Leave Our Kids Alone. Within a month, it had like 100,000 followers. To this day, it's still active. We have 134,000 followers. And we just slowly but surely, we used to do awareness campaigns every Friday. The parents would wear white to represent the protection of the purity and innocence of children. Because in this curriculum, they were saying like at the beginning of every module, they had like these bullet points. And one of the bullet points was like, you, as in a child who's reading this, have a right to decide when and who to have sex with. So I'm paraphrasing now, but that was basically the gist of it. As a kid, from the age of freaking 9, are you serious? And then they had very illustrious case studies of sexual assault that a grade 5 had to read. And I had a grade 5. And there's no ways I would allow them to read something like this. And anyway, the teachers thought they were doing this for the greater good of humanity because kids have phones now. So you have to come with the times. But actually what was happening is that the curriculum is giving kids ideas and causing more damage and even re-traumatizing children that have been abused. And so all our efforts culminated in about 1,000 of us parents taking to the streets on the State of the Nation address, the date of the, I think it was the 13th of February, 2020. And we said a public declaration. So all of us in all the different municipalities we were in read out the same declaration. And then we just spread awareness for it. We had bikers joining us. We had all kinds of citizens and groups joining us to pledge their support all over the country.
If the bikers are joining you, you're doing something right, I suppose.
We're doing that, guys. And anyway, Angie Metseka ended up saying it's no longer compulsory. She went from saying they're going to discipline teachers for not implementing these new SLPs to saying it's no longer compulsory. Teachers can choose if they want to incorporate it or not. It's still not 100%. Yeah, go ahead.
You kind of won.
Kind of. I'd like to see it completely out of the system, but
The amazing thing is, and honestly, I wish you guys all the best of luck. I really think it's terrific what you're doing and, you know, power to you. If anybody stands against stupidity and bad ideas and things like interfering with like the innocence of children, I'm all for what you're doing. I think it's terrific. And you've already proven you can make a difference. I wish you the best of luck. I hope you win. What the hell? Go for it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you so much, Darren.
Thank you, Lauren. There we go. That is us for Democracy 101 today. We will see you on Thursday at 6 a.m. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.